Hey guys, Eric Bischoff here. Now, if you need cash without the controversy, the team at SaveWithConrad.com can help. But don't take my word for it.
Hi, my name is Richard Smith. I'm from Moss Point, Mississippi. One of my friends at work said I'd just been refinancing and my interest rate was 9%, and he said he got his for 2.3. So I said, well, maybe I should try. Got a hold of Diane. She kept in touch the whole entire time. We owned two houses and we rented one out, and my renter quit paying, so we gave it back to the mortgage company. And because we did that, we had to wait 3 years for an FHA loan to go back through. The one thing that Conrad said on his podcast was, we'll never tell you no. We might say, not now, this is what we need to do, and we'll make sure we get it done. Well, prime example, 3 years. And when they say no money out of pocket, there's no money out of pocket, they figure it out. But like, she was so quick that, don't worry about this, I got this person. That's what impressed me the most. My name is Richard Smith, and I saved $700 a month with SaveWithConrad.com.
And unlike the dirt sheets, these reviews don't lie. With over 1,000 five-star reviews, find out for yourself how much Conrad and his team can save you by checking out SaveWithConrad.com and do it today.
NMLS number 32416, Equal Housing Lender, SaveWithConrad.com.
Words are about to be spoken on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, presented to you by the ad-free shows and podcast Heat Networks. I'm John Alba. That's the broken one, spoken one, woken one himself, Mr. Matt Hardy. Dude, what the hell, man? I mean, for real, like...
Yes, but mainly the broken one today.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Leaving me in the dark like that?
Left everybody in the dark, John.
We're tight. We're tight, bro. We talk every day. Your wife hates it.
You know who knew that I was actually going to Las Vegas to appear?
Just your wife.
Just my wife. And Maxwell knew. That would be it. It would have been hard for him to stooge anybody because he doesn't have a phone.
That's true.
I didn't even fill in Jeff. I didn't. No one knew. And I was just going to try and ensure as much as I could that the word didn't get out.
Well, we'll talk all about that here on the Return of Broken Matt Hardy episode.
Yeah.
Definitely something that blew up the internet for a hot second there. And it definitely blew up my phone too, I'll tell you that. Very excited to talk about that with you. Wild week in wrestling.
The only person who knew is in this room right now.
Oh, is she?
She just popped in. There she is. Look at that, doing a jig.
It's her little gloat dance.
Oh, there we go. There's your clip already.
Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, man. I want to, by the way, off the top here, I want to encourage everyone. We're really, really putting a lot of effort right now into our YouTube channel. So if you're not subscribed, Matt Hardy Brand on YouTube, we're trying to get a lot more engagement going on there. And it's been great. We love hearing the voice of the fans on Matt Hardy's YouTube channel. Even I feel like you were very early on the YouTube trend, weren't you?
I was very, very early on the YouTube trend. And I feel like there was pushback. At first when I really started pushing YouTube hard back in WWE, because social media wasn't, you know, something that was prevalent. It wasn't something that was pushed. It wasn't something that was accepted. But, you know, I realized it was a great way to get your message out there and to help add dimensions and layers to whatever your character or whatever your story was, you know, and I utilized it early on. And it's crazy how big it's blown up, and especially how wrestling and the wrestling industry has expanded so much more than just, like, you know, adding layers to characters and whatnot, like podcast and, you know, people covering pro wrestling and whatnot. Just as far as the internet and YouTube goes, it's blown up.
You were a forefather. That was one of the reasons that I even came to you about this podcast in the first place. And we are really trying to put some more equity into that. So if you're not subscribed right now, head on over to the Matt Hardy Brand YouTube page. Hit that subscribe button. Throw all those likes.
And as my son Lord Wolfgang would say, make sure you like, subscribe, and turn your notifications on.
There you go.
Doing that. He loves to say that.
He's a pro streamer, man. He knows.
He is.
He knows what's going on there. Yeah, man. I'm excited to talk about just the craziness of the past week for you. I'm sure it was absolutely nuts. And being able to pull off quite a coup here in 2024 is not easy as far as keeping secrets in wrestling. So, you know, there's going to be a great episode. There are some news bits that I'd love to pick your brain on. Namely,
let's do it.
The aftermath of the AEW Dynasty pay-per-view, which was a hell of a show. You know, one thing, Matt, I feel like you can say what you want to say about AEW Dynamite or Collision or Rampage. These AEW pay-per-views almost always deliver. Matt, why do you think that is?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. That's one thing. You can be critical of some of the stuff AEW does, but like whenever they do a pay-per-view, it's almost always guaranteed to be a grand slam. Because I do feel like their pay-per-view cards, they're hard to predict. It's matchups that are very compelling that you want to see, and they usually always deliver. And I didn't get to see this entire pay-per-view. I watched the main matches that I was kind of that I knew were going to be good that I could. Obviously, I was working the night of that pay-per-view, and I did catch up on it, and I really thought it was a very, very strong pay-per-view. So kudos to AEW and everyone on the show, because everybody busted their ass. That's one thing you can never take away from all the guys that step into an AEW ring. Everybody busts their ass every single night they're out there.
It seems like the pay-per-views are really what AEW was built for, because for months and months and months, you get these builds, and you know that is what that is. But we know that the very foundation of AEW is these great pro wrestling matches, and a pay-per-view is quite literally a showcase of the great pro wrestling matches that your promotion can actually put on. Did you notice anything different in how talent approached pay-per-view matches on an AEW show versus maybe anywhere else that you've worked?
I feel like if talent at AEW knows they have a big pay-per-view match coming up or whatever, they'll really start putting the thought process in early, like, you know, a couple weeks out, a week out, whatever it may be, like in advance, where I feel like some of the other companies I've worked for, they really focus in and hone in on it the day of, you know, and they really put together something strong. But I feel like there's a lot of people at AEW when they know they have this big match coming up. They're thinking about it for 2 weeks out, you know, not just a couple days before. They're thinking about it for 2 weeks out. So they're pretty dedicated to their craft, and they know it's going to be such a competitive show as far as like what the best match is. People want to go out there and they want to stand out as being one of the best matches on the show, no doubt.
I think that this pay-per-view had some matches we're going to be talking about for a while. The crowning moment of the show was Swerve becoming the new AEW champion. I know this podcast you've talked about Swerve in the past and being very high on him and his journey. What do you make of him beating Samoa Joe here and finally getting that moment crowned AEW's first Black World Champion?
Very happy for him, man. I like him a lot as a performer and as a person. So I was very happy that he was able to get this match and that now it is official and he is the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. And just proud of him, man. And I think it's also something that is very proud for, you know, the culture, him being a Black champion. It's a very inspirational for Black people in wrestling as well. So I think it's very good on that front. I thought it was solid. I know you are going to really talk about the match a whole lot, but I thought it was a very solid match. I was great to see. I thought it was a great decision to make Samoa Joe the champ in the meantime, because, you know, we kind of quickly came to an end as far as MJF's reign went, and like Samoa Joe becoming the champ following MJF. I want to give Samoa Joe his flowers, because he was a hell of a champion during the time he was doing. He was very believable. He was very badass. And I think the fact that we got to this point and we had the build up with him and Swerve knocked off Samoa Joe, who did seem like, in his own way, as Rock was saying, a final boss in so many ways, like this real big, bad Samoan badass. I'm very happy that Swerve got that strong win over him. And once again, I give Swerve and Joe their flowers.
That's so funny. You said badass and believable, because those were going to be the two words I was going to use to describe Joe. And you're entirely right about that, especially in the way they structured this match, where Joe was just an explosive, badass final boss, like you said, in the beginning of this right. match, where he really was putting the work in on Swerve. And it was structured in a way where, you know, Swerve was able to get your babyface comeback and overpower the monster. What is it about Swerve that you think connects with people and has made him so popular?
I mean, I think the first thing to me, here's what stands up to me. So he was with WWE, right? And then he was cut. He was released. And then he was able to have an opportunity at AEW. They brought him in. He starts rocking and rolling. And you can see how talented he is. And he's also very charismatic. He does music. He has a whole bunch of other interests too, right? He's a very well-rounded performer when it comes to everything. And then just he's a hell of a guy. You know, if you ask me, he is a hell of a guy. I like him. He's friendly to everyone he meets, whatever. But he did that where, when it ended at WWE, he could have like been upset and he could have almost went home and just gave up or whatever. But he's like, you know, okay, well, one door closes, let's have another door open. And another door open for him at AEW. And he made the most of that opportunity. And I think it's truly the case of someone who could have like said, oh, well, I lived my dream at WWE and I got released, so, you know, I'm done. He didn't do that. He like got driven, he got motivated, and he busted his ass. And he went as hard as he possibly could until he became one of the biggest stars in AEW, and he became the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. And I think people just following that story, it motivates them. It gives them inspiration that if they stumble, if they fall, if they fail, that they can pick themselves back up and they can continue onward and they can still be successful.
I know that you were on the fence about whether he should have won the title in the triple threat match at the previous pay-per-view or this one, but the way I saw it, him getting the singles moment where he firmly put away the badass heel, and they had that really great camera shot at the end as he's about to do the final stomp. They pulled out wide, and you see him soaking the moment in, and the crowd is just eating it up. It made for a star-making moment for Swerve, and I thought, Matt, that this ended up being the right time to pull the trigger on him. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it worked out well, and I'm glad it did. I was just concerned. He had built up so much great momentum, and he had such a great following behind him. I didn't want him to win the title when that wasn't at its peak. So it did. It stayed consistent, and he was still able to pick up this win over Samoa Joe, and it still ended up being a big moment, even a bigger moment, because it was a one-on-one match.
Well, and we talked about it last week in our State of AEW episode, which you can go find in the archives, by the way. I thought it was one of the best episodes we've ever done. I got a lot of feedback on that, too.
Yeah.
There have been times with AEW where they have missed the moment because something has been dragged out too long, or someone's gotten a little cold after they were super hot. So this was the right time to do it. He got the moment, and now he's the guy, and I'm very happy about that. The match before that was a ladder match that saw your pals, the Bucks of Youth, defeat FTR to win the tag titles. Jack Perry did make his return in this, as we kind of thought was going to happen. This was a very different ladder match for their standards. Extremely, extremely physical in a almost like a brute way. You know, very, very, very physical. What do you think of the ladder match and Jack Perry's return here?
I thought the ladder match was very strong. I thought FTR was very strong. I thought the Bucks were great. I thought the Bucks really, I think they really killed it as far as the way they portrayed heels in the match. Some of the things they did, even when you say, you know, it was different for a Young Bucks match, you know, they weren't looking to do as much of the spectacular flying and whatnot. They just seemed more aggressive, more gritty, more dirty. Like they just had to win, and if that means destroying FTR, like I love the spot where they put him in the ladder and they were smashing him with the chair over and over. Just there was a lot more things that were very, very physical. The first thing I thought after watching the match is like, I'd text him whenever I got back home after I got off the plane. I watched it on the plane. And I was just like, hey, how you guys doing today? I said, I'm sure your bodies have heat with you, you know, because you guys did. You bust your ass and killed it or whatever. And, you know, they said they were doing okay. But, yes, they were pretty beat up. And I imagine both guys were, them and FTR. They both beat the shit out of each other, no doubt about it. And then the Jack Perry return I thought was done so well. I loved how it was set up, how it looks like it was a jumper a fan who came in and like tried to shove down the deal. I loved how security was on him immediately. And the shot and the reveal when they pulled the Sting mask off and he had that shit eaten grin on, that was perfection. That was so good. And the crowd reaction to him was really good as well. And I think you've got something very special now with Jack Perry back, especially aligned with the Young Bucks, all as heels.
Two things again for the whole AEW doesn't tell stories camp. Like, even the small detail of him being in a Sting mask is a great storytelling beat with the Bucks and being involved in Sting's last match. That's great. But I think that this idea, Matt, that, you know, Jack Perry was a scapegoat and now he's back. And like you said, the crowd reaction, it was really impressive. The one critique I would have, I almost wish he had not been brought up by the Young Bucks on TV in the weeks prior. I almost wish that was a true surprise return, just to maximize that, because it was really telegraphed. I think everyone and their mother knew that he was coming back in this match. And like, predictable is not always bad. And as you said, the crowd reacted in a positive manner, so it's fine. But I think it really could have just taken that moment to the next level if there had been no mention or insinuation at all of Jack Perry in the weeks leading up to it.
Well, when their mentions, they called him scapegoat, correct?
They call him scapegoat. They're looking directly into the camera. Scapegoat is the moniker he's been rolling with.
I know, but I almost feel like, once again, and I'm just going to hit this point, I feel like someone like you, or me, I mean, a diehard fan, someone who's in the know does it all. And you know where I'm going with this already.
I got to cut you off there, because then that was hammered on even more by airing the Punk footage and owning in on Jack Perry being involved. So all of those things, it kind of was like beating you over the head with it, I felt like.
I think so. I think some of the people that are in the know, I think if there are people on the, on the outside in the periphery, I think those people, they hear scapegoat and who are they talking about, whatever else, and it's, oh damn, that's that Jungle Boy, he's back, you know. I didn't mind it, and I think I understand what you're saying. For us watching it, if he would have just shown up and be like, oh shit, that would have been very cool, whatever. But I feel like I like the fact that they dropped those breadcrumbs just for people who may have been just TV watchers more than anything else.
Yeah. Now those two matches had a really difficult job because they had to follow up.
Yeah. They really did.
And they did a great job at it, but they had to follow up. I'll say it. I think this was quite possibly the greatest match on American soil that's ever happened in terms of sheer pro wrestling action and in-ring storytelling. Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay. Before I give my thoughts on it, I'd love to hear your reaction.
You mean you think it was better than Edge versus Randy Orton, the greatest wrestling match ever? What was that match called? What was the title of that match?
No, it was literally called The Greatest Wrestling Match Ever.
Okay, I'm just curious. And during the pandemic. I thought it was great, man. You know, obviously I heard all the hype about it. I know you told me they had an all-timer. Yeah, it was great. Just Will Ospreay is just such an anomaly. I mean, he's a one of a kind. He really is. Like the way he did that moonsault and he like just lands and he rolls back over his head, back to his feet. Like just his agility and the way it's wild. Just his agility and his coordination is just so out of the ordinary. I mean, he is just such a standout athlete. It is insane. And everybody knows that Bryan Danielson is one of the greatest of all time, just an amazing wrestler, an amazing storyteller. you know, he can get in there, and he's once again very believable. Will Ospreay also very believable. And these guys went in there, they went at it, they went 150%, you know, the whole match, and they did a great job of just having a very compelling wrestling match where you could not turn away. You just had to watch it, and you had to see what was next. And it was really good. It was just it was fantastic.
How much did the crowd amplify the match for you?
Oh my God. I mean, once again, too, this is a conversation that we'd had. I was just going to say that Will Ospreay, being as new as he is, right, still probably to American people, American just pro wrestling fans, not diehard wrestling fans, you know, they're still familiarizing themselves with him. I mean, they love him. They have bonded with him already. The way they're yelling Ospreay, the way they, you know, chant and cheer, and they're just involved with every bit. He has a connection that is hitting just in the right way with all the AEW wrestling audience, and the crowd for that match made it so much better. You know what I mean? The crowd enhanced it so much. You know, they're sitting there staring off, you know, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. And dude, you can't substitute a great crowd. I mean, you can't ask for a better crowd. They had the crowd in the palm of their hands. The crowd wanted to see the match. They produced, and the crowd was there to give them exactly what they needed as far as interactions in the match.
They chanted, "We're not worthy." I've never heard that before at a wrestling show.
They also chanted, "Please be safe" in the ladder match, which was unique. They did chant,
"Please be safe." That was pretty good. The whole notion over the years that Ospreay is a spot guy. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched all of his work throughout his career. I mean, he's certainly
Seen enough of it in AEW at this juncture.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't know if he's grown, you know, over the course of the last 5-6 years, whatever it may be. You know, like I worked with him some back in 2016, 2017. I interacted with him a little bit. That's where I first met him and got to know him a tad bit. But yeah, I haven't followed him all the way through that, but I mean, no, he is a very, very complete, solid worker, also a good storyteller, and just the way he sells, the way he moves, his agility is like unparalleled. You know, the way he just like bounces back to his feet, the way he can move in the ring, he's just very unique, and he's very, very special. And he is not a spot guy. He is a very complete, solid worker when it comes to being an overall pro wrestler.
I thought the story they told in this match, where Danielson is the tested, somewhat cocky veteran, and Ospreay is this fired up baby face looking to slay the dragon, where Danielson had an answer for pretty much everything that Ospreay would do. One of the coolest parts of this match was he would try the Os Cutter, and Danielson had a different counter for each Os Cutter that Ospreay did. And just when Danielson would start to get a little cocky and like, yeah, I'm firmly in charge here, then Ospreay would pull something out and take him by surprise. All leading to that last moment where you've got Danielson in one corner and Ospreay in one corner. The camera did a fantastic job like getting each of them. Ospreay's pulling off his elbow pad. Danielson's doing the yeses. And it's like a movie, Matt, where you're like, oh my God. This is the hero and the villain. They're going to run at each other and one of them's going to die.
It reminded me of a Western, like two cowboys.
Exactly.
That's what it reminded me of. Like a Western, two cowboys getting ready to pull.
Yes. You've seen the Dark Knight Rises, right? With Batman and Bane.
Yeah.
When the cops and Bane's goons just run at each other at the end. Like I was like, oh my God, one of them's going to die. And the way that story was told was just so freaking fantastic. What'd you think of the end angle with Danielson and the injury?
I was okay with it, especially if they're going to make something out of it. If something comes of it, if something comes from it, then yeah, I'm okay with it. I don't mind it.
Yeah, it was a little controversial for some. I know they've done it a few times before with him, but It was an amazing, amazing, amazing match that I felt belonged in the pantheon of, and I'm not, it's not recency bias. I really firmly believe this. It belongs in the pantheon of one of the greatest matches ever in the United States. So we'll make of that what they will. And I really enjoyed Okada Pac too. I thought Okada Pac was a great match, and Okada just firmly embracing that heel side and really getting the crowd against him as a heel. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, especially when you're, you know, I mean, he's a Japanese legend, right? You know, it's just, I would say the only thing really working for him is that there are some people that watch AEW, some, not most of people do know him because they do also keep up with New Japan Pro Wrestling, being a little more diehard. But the people who don't know them, it's kind of like he has a clean slate to start with him, so he can be a heel. And playing off the Bucks is real easy because the Bucks have so much heat anyway. Like, people have gotten to the point where, you know, there's the diehard AEW fans there. They're at this point where, you know, the Pucks aren't just heels on TV. They think they're heels in real life too. They're pieces of shit as human beings, which is, you know, the furthest thing from the truth. But that they kind of have that, they kind of have that rep. They have that image right now. So that's what it is, and they lean into it.
They certainly do. One more on the AEW front I want to ask you about real quick. Willow Nightingale won the TBS championship. And I'm a big Willow person. Yep. I think Willow's got the potential to lead a division.
You've always been singing always. Her praises.
Day one on Willow. Yeah. She's going to be squaring off with Mercedes at Double or Nothing. What do you see in Willow? You know, young talent. I'm sure you probably haven't had too many interactions with her, but I mean, do you agree with my assessment that there's something special about her? What do you think she's capable of?
I mean, she just she reminds me, and this is no way like a physical comparison, but she reminds me of Dusty Rhodes in some ways. She's very likable. She's very charismatic. And whenever she goes out there and does things, it's just also very believable in whatever it may be. And you just, there's just something about her that makes you want to cheer for her. That is what I think of when I think about Willow. I mean, when you see her, she is a very friendly person. She just really radiates through the screen. And you're like, wow, I like this individual. I want to cheer for them. I want them to do good. I want to see them win.
She's like Popeye, man. Like, when she hulks up like that, you take the spinach and all of a sudden she just pulls the straps down. And it's such an easily identifiable babyface character that I really, really enjoy. And I think we got to pull the trigger now on Mercedes going full heel here. And like, she should be the adversary for Willow. And I think they're going to have a killer match when all's said and done there. And hopefully they have good synergy together.
Indeed.
So on the WWE end, one of the biggest pieces of news, Matt, this week, as far as this show is pertained, was the release of Cameron Grimes. We've done an episode on Cameron Grimes. Trevor Lee, you go way back with Trevor and his family. You were quite literally in the room when he was born.
Yeah, right.
He put up a very, very emotional video when he got cut. What can you tell us about your interaction with him regarding that? And what's your biggest advice?
You know, I spoke to him probably right before that video went up. And, you know, he had just texted me to let me know that it happened. And, you know, I was going to say both myself and Shane Helms, I feel like we've kind of also been father figures in his life, as, you know, it might sound a little odd. You know, his dad was, you know, around for a long time, but still, since he's gone, like, he was just always around myself and Shane and, you know, my brother and his dad. You know, God, we would do Omega shows. And for the people that don't know, Tracy Cadell, which is Trevor Lee Cadell, Cameron Grimes' dad, him and I, we are the two people who started Omega originally when it was called the East Coast Wrestling Federation, ECWF. That was the original name. And he was also the person who met this guy, Kenneth Morgan, who had this big 20-foot ring with a trampoline in the middle. And that's where we got introduced into like wrestling, you know, and like the whole production of selling tickets and setting up the ring and booking people and booking a show or whatever it may be. You know, that was our introduction in 1992, like right when we first started. And then in 1993, myself and Cameron Grimes' dad, we started running shows. And we worked very closely together. And like I said, I was there from the moment he was born all the way up. I remember him as a baby, being in the ring, playing. In a lot of ways, much like I think people will have Maxwell burned in their mind when he was a little kid doing stuff with me on TNA. That's kind of how, that's how Trevor's kind of burned in my mind in many ways. I remember, you know, just him being just such a small little child and like loving to get into the ring and loving to play with his dad. So I just once again reiterated to him that his dad was so proud of him. His dad was extremely proud of him when he just started making it on Ring of Honor and, you know, when he made it in TNA and whatnot, and he was able to tell him that he was signing to WWE before his dad, you know, unfortunately passed away. But like his dad loved pro wrestling so much, and he was so passionate about it. And he was really great at being working as a team to try and like promote the show and bring the show together and whatnot. He was so, so great and so passionate about that. And like, I know his dream, Tracy's dream, was if he couldn't make it, if he never got the opportunity to make it, he wanted his son to make it, and Trevor did. And I just, once again, reiterated to Trevor, his dad is crazy proud of him. And I am. I'm immensely proud of him, and I'm proud of what he's done. And he has such a bright future ahead of him. That first release, it hits very hard. It hits very differently, especially when you feel like you're having your dream taken away from you, and you think it might be over. You know, you doubt yourself, you question yourself. But he's going to be good. And I've told him my phone's always on. Let me know whenever, and I'll do whatever it takes to help you out. And I'm sure there'll be tons of things that I can buzz him on that'll help get him reacclimated to the independent wrestling scene and working to get into another company. He's going to be great. I mean, I have no worries about that at all. He's going to be golden.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. I'm very, very surprised that WWE didn't do anything with him when he got the main roster call up, because he was very over in NXT. I mean, he was right. Really connecting with the To the Moon character, and fantastic storyline with LA Knight they did there with the $1 million championship. I thought was very, very fun. And he just got the call up and nothing ever came of it. And I was very, very surprised by that. What do you think happens in a case like that? This isn't the first time
I don't know. I mean, he got the call up when Vince was still there though, right?
Not officially. Like, I mean, Vince was maybe in the back background, but you know, on the surface level, Paul was still running stuff.
I just feel like, you know, there was the time where Vince was gone and then like he was kind of calling the shots from afar, it seemed like, right? In many ways. But then there was a point where he was kind of like back and he was flexing himself. I feel like that whole period was just such a weird period. And there were a lot of people that were probably, you know, they were kind of like unstable in many ways, just because like no one was really sure who was running. I feel like now that Vince is gone, and it is, you know, it's Paul Levesque through and through. He's making all the decisions. I feel like everyone's now on more solid grounding, and they know where they're at, if that makes sense.
Well, we wish him nothing but the best. He's got an open invite whenever he wants to come chat on here. We'd love to have him.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. We'll have him on at some point.
Yeah, and like you said, he's just too talented not to find his footing. He's really, really good and really charismatic. And I have no doubt he'll be great. And
he's a freaky athlete too. He's a freaky athlete. He's like freaky, like crazy strong, has this crazy joint strength and big high leaps. He's a great athlete.
Country strong, as they say.
He is, yeah.
Down there in the Carolinas. All right, Matt, we're going to be talking about Broken Matt Hardy's return to TNA here on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. But before we can, you know what I got to ask? Please hit us with that Matt fact.
Matt fact, Matt has returned to the birthplace of the broken universe. Yeah.
All right, man. Break it down for us, because you and I were taping this podcast a week ago, and you told me in hindsight you very deliberately placed a Matt fact to try to lay a seed for what was to come. So take us through it here. How did that first call happen?
So it started with getting a text on Tuesday from Tommy Dreamer. And he just said, hey, TNA has been asking me about you. You know, if you're free now, they'd be interested. I've got some dates, could run by you, whatever. He said it'd be great to work with you again. And then I ended up speaking to him, and he shot me some of the dates, and it was wild. The dates that they all shot kind of like fell on the weekends that I wasn't already booked to do signings or a con or whatever it may be. So I said, okay, well, I think this could be cool. And we worked out some stuff on Wednesday and Thursday creatively. I talked to some of the creative people. We got kind of everything up and running. They got me a flight. They got everything set up. It was going to be a big secret kayfabe. I come in at the end of the show, as I did. And it materialized very quickly over just a couple of days.
Yeah, I'd say so. So let's get the foundation out of the way. Are you signed on a contract to TNA Wrestling right now?
No, I'm just doing a per shot per appearance deal right now. And okay. And we're just kind of playing it by ear just to see how long this lasts. You know, this is while I'm still speaking to entities at AEW, still speaking to other entities in other places. And I feel like even doing it, and this is one of the reasons I say this, because towards the end of AEW, myself and Jeff, I feel like we had cooled off so much. I wanted to put in that mad fact of like, Matt is in no rush to sign a contract, because I think I can do TNA television for a few weeks back to back, be in a good angle, be in a good story. And I think it will help heat me back up a little bit. And I think that's important, especially when you've been cooled down a lot. I think it's important to heat yourself back up and get some buzz on you and get some buzz surrounding you as far as the business goes. And then once again, I think there's some other places, you know, I could like pop up and make appearances or whatever. So as far as the contract thing goes, you know, when you sign a contract, then you are locked in, you know, so you have to be there. And then that takes away a little bit of your freedom of creativity and whatnot. And it kind of, it tightens the knot of you being able to like just pop up and show up wherever you want to. But TNA, I got to say, they were great. You know, they were open to everything. They really rolled out the red carpet for me, first class, which was amazing. And it was great to be back there. It was a great locker room. It was great to see the people I hadn't seen in a while. And I was very happy with the weekend. It was a really fun, and it felt like a very productive weekend. And it should lead to a couple more very fun weeks of TV coming up.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
We'll dive more in on the locker room and stuff like that over the course of this conversation, but I want to continue with the logistics of this. So you are on this week-to-week agreement essentially here where you're just lining up TV. Was creative like laid out for you in this pitch? Like what's that process like for you?
Yeah, I mean, they just we talked about a couple different ideas about things we could do, and then we ended up going, you know, with the deal that I show up at the end of the night. And ironically, the last time they were in this venue, which was months back, this is where Nick Nemeth actually showed up, and it was a lights out thing, and he did it with Moose as well. So we kind of did a parallel to that. It was very interesting that he was actually having the match with Nick Nemeth here. Then I show up and do that, you know, and then I let it be known that I want to come after the championship of the world in TNA. So yeah, we just kind of, we talked about the creative, we're going to work it out. And we said we had a couple weeks of TV we're going to do after that. And we said we would kind of lay that out over the next couple of days, like while I was traveling and flying and whatnot. But yeah, we just knew I had a 7 a.m. flight leaving Raleigh-Durham, direct to Vegas on Saturday, you know, and their show kicked off about, I think 5-ish is when the actual show kicked off local time, because it started at 8 here. So I was able to get into Vegas around 11 o'clock. This is very funny. So, right, I ask if I could be picked up, because they said, would you rather just get a ride to the hotel? I was staying in a different hotel from everybody else in TNA. Would you rather get a ride to the hotel on your own, or would you rather have someone come scoop you up? I said, I'd rather have someone some scoop me up. So it's just like, I don't have to like sit out there. I don't have to do things myself. And I'm like waiting. I just like literally wanted to try and move through the airport as fast as I could, because I didn't want anybody to like say, oh my God, Matt Hardy's in the Las Vegas airport. Right. So sitting here, and I threw a hoodie. I knew I wouldn't need it. I was going to Vegas and I'd already seen the temperature. It was nice and warm and toasty. So I have a hoodie in there that I'm going to rock. So I'm getting off the airplane and I have my shades on. I have my headphones on as I usually do as I'm walking through an airport. But then I was like, okay, let me grab my hoodie. I said, and I'll get off the plane and then I'll put on my hoodie and I'll have it down and I'll stay low and I'll try and, you know, on the DL, I'll try and very quietly get my luggage and then sneak outside to where my ride's going to be that's ready to pick me up and go. as soon as I walk off the jetway and out of the gate, and I'm grabbing my hoodie to put it on, there was a group of like five or six people, four guys and two women. And they go, oh my God, Matt Hardy, Hardy boys, this is awesome, man. Oh, how's it going?
You can't throwing the juke up, do delete, delete, delete.
Oh my God. There was one scene, be one. And they said, oh my God, can we take pictures with you? Can you take pictures? And I was like, yeah, sure.
God. Boy.
And it's so funny. My wife, she like ringed me. She's like, what the? Why didn't you not put it on when you were on the plane? As soon as you walked off, I said, well, I mean, I was going to put it on immediately when I walked off, when I had room to. But yeah, I took pictures with those guys, and thank goodness no one posted. And they weren't aware that wrestling was even there. So yeah, I'm just coming to do a couple things in Vegas for a couple days. So
okay,
so I was lucky on that.
Interesting. Run.
But that was a wild moment. Like as soon as I walked off, because all was in my mind, like, okay, I need to get this hood on and pulled over.
You should have had the face mask, the COVID mask.
Yeah. I could have done that too. Yeah. We talked about that. Later I did, because I told that story to a couple of the boys, you know, once I got over to the arena or after my appearance that night. So yeah, man, we did that. I took pictures with those people. I got my bags and it was great. Like, you know, I had my hoodie on. I didn't look at anybody. I was down like a weirdo. Like I'm sure someone thought I was there to cause damage to somebody or I was up to something suspect. And then I get my bag, slide out my rides there, boom, straight away to the hotel, you know, on a hotel where no one else is away. And then we end up going to the show about 5:30-ish, you know, the show had been going for a little bit. And then I come in and they take me down this hallway. They moved people out where no one was around, and they did it really good. Kudos to TNA on this too. And then I went to a room with just like one of the management rooms where only a couple people that knew I was going to be there were in there. And then I stayed in that room. Like I wanted to go out and like get a Gatorade or water or coffee. And unfortunately I was able to get someone to go get it for me. I didn't want to walk outside and just say, what if there's someone,
you don't want to risk anything. I get
it. No. If there's someone working security and then they text, or even if it was one of the wrestlers and they text Sean Ross, Seb, hey, guess what? Matt Hardy's in the building. You know, that's all it takes. And I scrolled through, and it's so funny you said that about vanity searching the other day, because I went in and I like put in Matt Hardy and I was scrolling all the way up until I went out just to make sure it never got out. I'd do it every 15 minutes or so. And it never broke. It never broke online, which is a rarity in this day and age.
No, I mean, shoot. I had no idea, like none. And I was just on my Zeter timeline and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Broken Matt's here. I'm like, I literally shouted, I just, this motherfucker. It's just like, you gotta be kidding me. And like, I mean, I was very happy for you. Obviously I was thrilled. And the other thing, I was like, man, I didn't even know his hair's that long. Because I always see you with your hair in the ponytail.
But
all these, you know, wrestling media people and wrestling fans, they contact me. They're like, bullshit, you didn't. You knew. I'm like, no, I legitimately had no idea. What at SNY? I was at SNY last night. They're like, so when did he tell you? I'm like, he didn't. Like they all just assume that you really. And maybe that was you ribbing me after our whole episode about kayfabe being dead. I don't know, but like you kayfabe.
I mean, it wasn't even that. Like I spoke to Jeff that day. I spoke to Jeff in Vegas, and I just didn't even say anything about it. You know, we talked blah blah blah, and then we did the deal. And it's so funny because then like the next morning, you know, Jeff was already in bed by the time I was making the debut. Whatever, he's up at 4:45 in the morning. Right, that's just his ritual now. That's where he's at. And I noticed I'd gotten a text. I'd been sleeping after I woke up and Jeff said, oh man, he said, that was cool shit last night, man. I saw it back, you know, on Instagram or whatever. He said, that was cool, man. He said, glad it went good. You know? And it's just so funny. He's just like, so down with it. He gets it, you know?
Yeah, it was wild. I uninvited you to my future wedding, which of course is not in the books at any point. So when that happens, though, boy howdy, let me tell you. But yeah, no, it was amazing, man. And just, I mean, you were trending number one. It was a big deal, and you came out there. I mean, as a performer, how did it feel to don the broken mat garb again and go out in front of a live crowd and do it? And like the anticipation too, of just getting ready to go out there. How did that all feel?
I was going to say, one of the things that is a little nerve-wracking, they had a couple guys, one guy that was going to lead me and a guy behind me, like with a light. So it was a pretty long run to where I had to get into the back of the ring and whatnot. And it was just like, oh, holy fuck, you know, we're going through the crowd. Like, I hope no one gets in the way. I hope I don't mow anyone down. I hope someone doesn't trip me, whatever it may be. But it was very smooth. You know, we got there, we had to like come down this way. And then it was like over to the left, and it's the left again into the barricade, boom. And then into the back of the ring. But everything went very, very smooth. It's so funny, but they came out and there was a couple of lights, and you can hear it on the clip a little bit.
Yeah, there's a couple deletes.
There's a couple deletes, but there was someone said, oh, I heard the first thing I heard, like once we get out, like right by the crowd, there's a light right flashing. They see me run and say, someone said, oh shit, it's broken Matt. You know? Which is funny because they can just like probably just see my jacket a little bit.
Yeah.
Glowing as I was getting out there and getting into the ring. But yeah, man, it was, it went good. We got in there, we did that, and it was one of those things. I wanted to go well. I was very happy with the reaction. People were very excited by it. And, you know, I was going to do a promo at the very end, but, like, part of the reason I didn't do that is they advertised, you'll hear from Broken Matt tomorrow for the first time since returning to TNA, and that's kind of how the show opens up on Thursday.
Yeah, I just thought, like, the whole – I mean, they popped huge. And listen, they're going to be the detractors. They're going to say, oh, man, I don't want to see Broken Matt in 2024. But I feel like it was a largely really exciting response from people. And they're very much looking forward to having the return of this character that, I mean, especially if you are a diehard TNA fan.
Right.
Like that character is so ingrained. Broken. I don't care what people say. I'll say this. Broken Matt Hardy saved TNA. Broken Matt Hardy saved TNA. So to have that synergy again where you're working with TNA as this character, I don't know, Matt, to me, that's meaningful. How do you look at it?
I think so too. And I'm also going to push the character forward. Like I'm getting ready to start shooting some vignettes where, you know, maybe you see something, and I'm going to lean on Rebby a little bit on this too. I think there's also going to be a utilization of some more of my family in it too. Like that's not out of the question as far as it is going forward. And even Rebby said she's ready to wrestle a match, and there might be something there with, you know, Eddie Edwards and his wife. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the whole thing with Broken Matt, I think I'm going to push it forward where I am Matt Hardy. You know, this is me, Matt Hardy, the living legend, you know, the guy who's done it all, is the Hardy Boys, one of the greatest tag team members of all time, whatever. He is aware that he is Broken Matt, almost like a Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk thing. So that's, I'm going to push the character forward where we're going to get into that. And it that makes it a little more clear.
You won't like me when I'm broken. I like it. That's good. The anticipation of the moment when the lights come up, and did that still give you the feels? Like, I don't know, for me, in the segments that I've done in indie wrestling, even when you know you're going to do something that the crowd has no idea is coming, and you're anticipating it, and then when you hear the response, and it's just so grand.
Right.
That's like the best feeling ever.
It is. It's nice. And it's exhilarating. It motivates you. It makes you want to go harder. It fires you up. It really does. And it's cool because once again, it was one of those things like nobody expected to see Broken Matt Hardy pop up at the end of Rebellion.
TNA has a lot of young talent the speedball Mike Bailey's, you know, even someone like Ali, who's getting another chance right now, you know, yeah. And he's crushing it. He's awesome. They bring in Matt Hardy, who's nearly 50. And this is me, you know, speaking about it from the objective critical standpoint.
Of course, right? No, as you should.
And he's taking a spot that could be going to someone else in this moment in time, coming off the Nick Nemeth match.
Mm-hmm.
Justify that for me. Make it make sense in a way that is digestible for everyone.
I can help TNA because there is a lot of equity in the name of Matt Hardy. Broken Matt Hardy is one of the most popular characters that's ever been in TNA. And you know me, and the people who do understand me, you know, that are online or whatever else, know that I am there for the greater good. And I know Speedball is one of your guys, right?
Love him. Love him.
You're going to be very tickled about Broken Matt Hardy's next couple weeks in TNA. Because, yeah, it's going to be unique, and I can help elevate people there. I can help make people into bigger deals, and that is my goal. Anytime I go anywhere, that is what I want to do. But there also has to be, I have to be given something as well in return to be able to do that, to be able to make people into bigger stars, to be able to elevate other people, or to be able to give people a rub for someone who's been on TV for, you know, almost 30 years straight.
What do you think about working Moose?
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. I did a thing with Moose at one point on like a one night only. And we had a pretty good little deal, but I loved how he's really established himself as a real dominant force. The mammoth known as Moose, as a Broken Bat is going to be calling him in the present. I think he's done a good job establishing himself. He's become like a legitimate, and he's kind of came off as a threat, and he has a good little deal going with the system. So I'm very excited to kind of delve into a battle with these guys.
What'd you think of the new TNA locker room and the staff there?
Everybody was super friendly. It's funny. I was after my match and after my appearance, after the, you know, the Moose Nick Nemeth match, and I got back, I was there for so long. Like, I didn't do a couple things. I did one little promo. And then like my wife's like, "Oh my God, why were you there so long?" I said, I was almost like just saying hello to everyone because like no one had seen me, you know what I mean? And they were just like, "Oh my God, I had no idea you were here," which was so great. I don't even think Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards, I think they just found out like right before their match that I was going to be popping up, which was great. I'm glad it was handled that way. That's how you keep stuff quiet. You know, you have to just keep it on the DL as much as you possibly can. It was cool though, man. A great, great locker room. Everybody was super friendly, super nice. Super excited, like I said, "Oh my God, it's so great to see you here. It's so great to see you here." And then it was a lot more fun the next day because I kind of got to interact with them throughout the day as we taped the next couple weeks TVs.
Does it feel weird doing it without Brother Nero?
Yes and no. I mean, I kind of got used to doing Broken Matt by myself if need be. And it's one of those things, Broken Matt is really like instinctual to me. It's not like hard. I don't really have to change my mindset a lot to go do it, to act like him or to speak like him. It really is like an instinct at this point. So, is it great doing it with Jeff? Yeah, it's the best when Brother Nero and Broken Matter together. But as far as doing it on my own, like, yeah, I'm going to have some fun with it. I'm going to have some fun with it and hopefully have some fun with the ball of speed too. Maybe even make him be an ally of mine over the next couple of weeks.
Do you think Brother Nero would be an appealing character for Jeff at any point in the near future?
Yeah. I mean, Jeff's always loved. I think he cherishes the time he did as Brother Nero. He really enjoyed it. It was a way for him to kind of be different. It was a way for him to be creative and kind of tap into that dark side of him a little bit. So yeah, I think he does enjoy it.
I want to read to you report from Fightful Select this week.
Please do.
And if you have any comment on it, feel free. Jeff Hardy contract update. It's titled Jeff Hardy's AEW deal is up much sooner than expected. When Jeff Hardy signed with All Elite Wrestling years ago, we'd reported that it was done in a way that Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy's deals matched up. However, that is no longer the case, but they're not far off. Matt Hardy appeared in TNA on April 20th after allowing his contract to expire, but reiterated that he's a free agent. His deal actually expired in March, but was extended a couple of weeks past WrestleMania. Originally, it was believed that AEW had extended Jeff Hardy's deal into 2025 due to injury and sabbatical time. As of late March, that wasn't the case. At that period, Hardy's deal was set to expire sometime in the spring based on what Jeff Hardy told other talent at recent conventions. AEW could likely extend the time on the deal. A lot going on there in that report. Anything you can say to that?
There's a little bit going on. I think that is accurate, though. So I'll give, Fightful their flowers. I think that is accurate. It's coming up a lot sooner than we thought it was going to come up. I guess it could be extended if need be. Once again, I don't know. I don't know what they'll do, but it seems like from what I know and what I'm aware of, because when they offered me a deal, they offered Jeff a deal at the same time, and they were very similar, and his date was a lot earlier than we thought. So yeah, that report is pretty accurate.
So I want to clarify there. You said when they offered you a deal, they offered Jeff a deal at the same time. Are you referring to when Jeff came in, or are you referring to recently?
Recently.
So Jeff was offered a new deal as well as you?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. So we don't know the status of any of that yet at this juncture. I mean, I'm not trying to speak for Jeff here or anything of that, but as far as things stand at this moment in time?
As far as things stand at this moment in time, just nothing has changed.
Status quo.
Yeah, it's status quo. Once again, I'm a free agent, and Jeff is just still finishing his time as of right now.
Okay. Do you view your path forward as linear, having to be with Jeff? Do you view it as something that you'd be okay with doing on your own? What's your approach on that?
I would rather do it with Jeff, because Jeff and I, we have all these appearances, that we're doing together. So we're at our best when we're together. And I even think Jeff would, admit that and say that as well. Like, it's most beneficial for us when we're both together. So we shall see. If something happened and it was just me doing my own thing, I'm okay with doing that. I've never been afraid to do that. I'm not afraid of working hard and not afraid of betting on myself. But we'll see. Yeah. In a perfect world, it's Jeff and I, we match up and we make decisions together going forward.
You excited to wrestle again? You haven't wrestled this year.
Yeah. I've wrestled one time. I wrestled in a six man with Mark Briscoe in the beginning. Yeah. So it'll be interesting, especially too, that my body, I've been training super hard and super healthy and feel good. And not very beat up. So yeah, it'll be exciting to wrestle again.
Even with all those diminished skills?
Even with all those diminished skills.
Okay. That's good. Yeah, man. The Twist of Fate looked awesome. I told you that. That was one of your best Twist of Fates in a real long time. Moose got up great for it. It looked impactful. That was good shit. I was like, damn, okay. Matt's ready to go here.
I just wanted Moose to feel it. I wanted him to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm super happy for you. I totally agree with you with what you said about how, you're trying to help elevate the locker room, help elevate the product, and in turn that benefits. That's mutually beneficial for everyone. And I don't know, whether you want to comment on this or not is up to you, but I put this out there when it happened. I know you, and I think that this is very much in part, you trying to prove to the world that if you want to discount the Hardys, if you want to discount Matt Hardy, here's what I still got to offer, and here's why I'm worth your time and caring about. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's legitimacy to that, no doubt. Because I'm big on, I've been signing autographs recently. I did the last couple of weeks. because the Hardys for a while, we would hit Dream to Defy. And what was so funny, it was such like a Team Extreme, or, you know, in spelling Extreme with an X as opposed to an E, or like Hardy Boys with a Z instead of an S. We would write Dare to Dream, and it would be every time. Whenever we like write it out to someone and personalize it, it's a two, the number. And like, we just, that's just embedded in us at this point. But I just saw where, you know, we would sometimes sign Dare to Defy. And I feel like I'm in that mode right now. Like, I am daring to defy, like defy people's expectations of my, you know, tenure, of my age, of my physical well-being, of, you know, their expectations. I am here and I am dreaming to defy, and I want to inspire other people to defy too. And I want to inspire other people to bet on themselves. I want to inspire other people to bust their ass and work hard, and just show people that you can, that you can have confidence and faith in yourself, and you can go out and you can do whatever you want.
You've always lived by that way. I'll say the Z and the two and all that. That's a little year 2000, but that's okay. I'll give you the pass on that one. That's embedded in 2000s aughts culture, but it's great, man. I'm super happy for you. I think you have a chance to do something very different. And, you know, too, this is the point I want to wrap on. This only exists because of how open-minded pro wrestling has become in recent years. Like, this opportunity for you to go unsigned on another television show,
right,
only exists because the industry has evolved. How'd that open up for you?
I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where the landscape of wrestling has changed in some ways. If there's enough equity in your name, you know, you can go places and you can do things without being contractually obligated in some ways. And I think that's a positive, especially for someone like me, because it allows me to be creative. And it also just makes pro wrestling so unpredictable. You know, like it once again, it helps challenge what the definition of kayfabe is in 2024. And who knows? I mean, who knows where this goes? Who knows where I go next from TNA? Is it WWE? Is it AEW? Do I end up doing something long-term with TNA? I mean, who knows? Anything is possible. And that is one of the things that I really enjoy and like about this, is because it is unpredictable, and it allows me to be kayfabe in 2024.
I said it on the X. It's amazing that in April, we had two matches that are probably going to go down as two of the most memorable American matches of all time, with Ospreay and Danielson, mm-hmm. and then Cody winning the championship. And those two matches that are going to be amongst the most memorable ever could not have been more different from one another. And rather than spending time on what you don't like, it's proof in the pudding that there's so much out there that you can find that you will like and enjoy. And hopefully Broken Matt Hardy and what TNA is going to do here is going to offer up a little something special. And any, you want to give us a little preview of what's ahead, what we can expect here? You mentioned the kids getting involved, the family getting involved. What can we look forward to?
I was going to say, on Impact this Thursday, you'll hear from Broken Matt Hardy. We'll kind of see what is his goal? Why did he return to TNA? He'll kind of let his intentions be known. And then I think over the next week or so, you'll realize that I might need some help in deleting this system now that Brother Nero isn't available to help. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun little journey. And, you know, whenever people talk about TNA and Broken Matt, immediately you think about one of the greatest characters from the whole Broken Universe, and that is the Hardy Compound. Like, at some point, is there going to be some sort of massive Hardy Compound, you know, the system deletion or whatever it may be? You know, anything can happen in the extreme life of Matt Hardy.
You're getting good at these. That's good. It's very good. And if you want to be part of the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy family, here's how you do it. You head on over to advertisewithhardy.com. You promote your business to the extreme, get it out in front of thousands of listeners and viewers every single week. And it's a growing audience too, which excites me. Go to boxofgimmicks.com. I'm wearing my 5 Cinco 5 Cinco 5 stars t-shirt right now. You can put that on your back as well. We'd love for you. Boxofgimmicks.com. Search the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy section and get on that. If you're watching via YouTube, which I encourage you again, subscribe Matt Hardy brand. You can see the QR code that is there. That will take you directly to it. And if you want early access to the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, adfreeshows.com is going to be your place to get that. Matt, anything else you'd like to add here?
No, man. It was fun. It was a really fun weekend. It's strange in some ways because just like you kind of get, once you're someplace for so long, you just kind of get used to it. And it's wild to go to another locker room with a whole different set of people, but like people that you're friends with everyone, you know, like, and you know everyone, you've had interactions and you have history with them and whatnot. It's cool. But like seeing them is just like, it's like a family reunion in many ways. And then you just go about your thing and do business. So that's one of the cool things about pro wrestling. You go to different places where there are different people, but at the end of the day, it's all the same. And you want to go out there and entertain people and make them cheer and boo and put smiles on their faces. That is the ultimate end game.
We love to hear it. We love to hear it. You certainly don't hate to see it. I promise you that. The words have been spoken. We'll see you next time right here on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy.
Die! My skin's dying.